Three, two, one, and we're back. Welcome to the SBH podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to be talking about how I finally had success and caught my first bass of the season. And it was hilarious because I think the last time I left off with you guys, it was Wednesday, and the day before I caught my first fish of the season on Cape Ann. And I said to you, there's tons of rain bait around. And I'm betting that there's going to be a blitz. Literally, the next morning, I got a tip. Shout out to you. I got a tip from someone that said that there's blitzing fish. And so I went and I fished that area. And I actually had success and caught one bass. Caught one bass in the morning. I came back in the evening and to film and fish, and there was probably 100 yards of blitzing fish, crazy amount, like full waves full of bass, and just blitzing on rain bait. And I was like, I was extraordinarily stoked to catch one fish because, as you guys know, putting in work this spring, so much work. I was putting in hours upon hours upon hours. And so since then, the fishing has not been great, and yesterday, literally, it started to pick up, and I found a pattern that has been working very well for me. And I'm super happy that I found it, because it is one of my goals in the spring is to really learn the estuaries well, and I figured out a pattern in the estuaries, so which is hilarious. So I just want to like point out the amount of time that I've spent researching spots goes into like probably over 100 hours in the past week to 2 weeks. Probably I've spent over 100 hours or more researching spots and like Google Earth, going and fishing there for 4 or 5 hours a day, you know, putting in a crazy amount of hours to catch fish. I've seen some very interesting things. Number one, the most interesting to me is adult bunker, and I snagged multiple adult bunker. So the adult bunker, and not only are they in the estuaries, they're also in off the rocks, which means that the next new moon, whenever that is, I think it's probably late May to early June, that new moon there is going to have 30 to 40 pound bass. So, yeah, get ready for that because that is happening, on Cape Ann. And I'm not even exaggerating. If you can find a pattern where there is bait being blown onto shore, there should be some adult, and you know, there's adult bunker in the area. I would not be surprised if people started to catch 30, 40 pound bass, like ridiculously early. So, but regardless of my pattern here, I think I just want to say, if people think I'm a magical fish catching machine, this is just not the case. The only reason I am in the way you guys probably perceive it a lot of the time is just because I put in a ridiculous, and I mean a ridiculous amount of effort to catch fish, and it doesn't always pay off. In fact, most of the time it doesn't. I took probably 6 shot in the dark, like shots in the dark, I guess you could say. And it paid off once for me this whole year. Literally, it's only paid off once, and that was yesterday. So there's estuaries that I've fished before, and I've been not overly confident about it because I don't fish estuaries. But the thing is, in the springtime, the bass stage up in estuaries. And I, as you know, I'm a guy that likes to fish off the rocks. It's just where I've learned, and I know if there's bass in the area staged up, I can catch them. Generally, if they're not feeding on rain bait that is like 1/2 inch long, and that's what they've been doing. And finally, we had a huge, I think we had 2 days of north wind blowing up to 56 miles per hour, I believe. There was one day where there was a gust, I think I want to say Rockport, that was recorded at like 56 miles per hour. So that is like north. So all this rain bait, which is so wind dependent, because we had a bunch of south wind, that's why they were all got blown in. And then this north wind, or I think it was northwest or west northwest, I don't know, all got blown out to sea. So that we're done with that noise, which is good because, oh my God, it was ridiculous. It was just so stupid because there were bass around, and I think there were bass around. April 27th was the first time I actually think I saw striped bass feeding on rain bait. And I couldn't catch, I wasn't able to catch a fish because I didn't have the right tools to catch, like to mimic bait that was that small until I got, as I talked about in the last podcast, about soft plastics, I got a 4-inch sluggo, and which is really slender and really thin, but it's the exact profile. And I even was having to bite the, like a good little bit of the soft plastic off. So it turned into more of like a 3.5-inch soft plastic on a weightless hook. And I was fishing an egg float because I need to cast, like I had to cast out there far enough. And there was ridiculously, like there was a ridiculous amount of blitzing, like fish. Like I've never actually seen bass blitz in the spring. Like there's a fall run, or there's a spring run and a fall run, which a lot of you guys know and a lot of you guys love. I think the spring run's actually better than the fall run. And the reason I say that is because during the spring run, the bass are actually coming and staging up, and you have potential of catching extraordinarily large fish, which are very loose to eat whatever you throw at them. And what I mean by that is, like, you can catch a 30, 40 pound bass in the spring on a pencil popper, no problem. And yeah, and then they stage up in spots, and then you can fish them with eels at night and kill them. So, I mean, it's just one of those things that's like, in the fall, the bass move. They move in the fall. But then when they're in the spring, they move, and then a good portion of them stage in feeding zones. And I fish off the rocks in a spot that will catch bass as early, if not earlier, than a lot of people that get them in the estuaries. And the reason I say that is because I know that that spot always fills up with bait early in the spring. And it's really good from like early spring to probably mid-June, and then it starts to tail off around mid-June, and you can get bass in June there that are 40 pounds. I fished with like two other people that I was able to bring there, and I got them both on bass that were in the like high 30s to 40 pound range. I actually didn't catch fish. They caught bigger fish than me early. So, and then a little bit later I got a couple of 15, 20 pounders there, but that's besides the point. This year's a whole new year, and the crazy thing about this new year is the bunker, and that's why I have two giant plugs on my desk here, or my little table. And one of those is a bunker colored Danny plug, and the other one is a bunker colored double jointed swimmer. And I'm super excited to throw those when I know there's going to be some bigger bass around. I also have a huge rig deal, which I did on one of the podcasts. So you guys can watch that podcast of me rigging the eel. I think the hope is that we can start to get more bass in. And what I mean by that is like, I went to the tackle store. I was talking to the guys at the tackle store, and they're saying people that they consider good fishermen, put their time in and do a lot of fishing, have been struggling, which makes me feel a little bit better about myself. I've been struggling more than most because I've been a little bit stubborn trying to, like, I know there's fish here, I want to fish here, but really what I should have been doing is because again, I don't really fish in the estuaries, and I know the estuaries are going to be on fire. So there's a huge amount of estuaries around Cape Ann. I think there's like three or four big ones. And then you go a little bit further in either direction, then there's some nice rivers that get bass early. I started to really start figuring out, okay, what I know, like two of them to me stand out as probably the best ecosystems, for just the animals that live in marshes, just the huge amount of bait, huge amount of different, like huge amount of just different life in there, in those areas. And, not the easiest to fish to get access to, And for instance, I literally biked 12 miles. I think it's 6 miles each way from there. Yeah, so I biked like 12 miles to catch 2.5 fish. And well, I mean half a fish, I'll get into that in a second. But I mean, you know what I'm saying. Like, but literally, I biked 12 miles to catch 2 fish. And that is how hard you got to work now with the coronavirus parking situation being so horrible. I hope it's going to start to ease up a little bit. I think it is going to in the next few days. It's going to start to ease up. But there's one spot in particular, and if you live on Cape Ann, you probably know where I'm talking about. If you fish the estuaries around Cape Ann, and you're probably like, how did you'll understand why I actually biked that far, or like how far I actually had to go in order to fish there. Because it's like, not only like, do you have to like find a place to park that you're not going to get towed or ticketed or whatever, then you have to make it from there to where you have to fish without like anybody getting mad at you. And it's been a struggle to get to these places, but I finally found bass that are willing to eat. Oh, like it, the struggle that I've had to find fish that are actually willing to eat. Like I've been able to find them, and that's the easy part is finding the fish right now. I found thousands of bass in like when they were blitzing and they were feeding. It's just that there's so much bait in the water. I was like, I couldn't reel my whatever I was using, my soft plastic or my fly, or strip my fly in like more than a foot without snagging 4 rain bait on my hook and just getting the whole hook clogged up with rain bait. So it was a situation that I talked about last time, and I called it and I said, they're going to be blitzing. I'm going to have my little 4-inch sluggo. Everybody else is going to be angry because they can't catch anything, and I'm the only one that's going to be catching anything. I was right about one of those statements. I called that there was going to be blitzing bass, but I could not for the life of me catch fish. And I was that angry fisherman sitting there and losing my mind at thousands of bass blitzing and not being able to actually hook into any of them. And so we're doing the striped bass hunt show this summer, and the first episode's like the spring episode. Just wait until you see, I mean, oh my God, the quality of the footage that we have is just extraordinary. And the bass, like we have the bass blitzing, we have the bass or the rain bait on my hook getting stuck on my hook. There's a literally, I have video of me walking into this bait, this like giant school of rain bait, and just reaching in the water and just picking up a handful of minnows. Like there's that many minnows in the water, little rain bait. And so that was ridiculous. But as I said, that got blown away. So then I was like, okay, come on, these bass have to start to be staging up. So then I was fishing off the rocks in this place that I know that there are bass that stage up there. It's in the spring. I mean, it's the same spot. I mean, I know there's fish that stage up in there in the spring. I had by the time, like the night before I actually caught my first fish of the season, I had 40 fish. No, that's a lie. The night after I caught my first fish of the season, I already had 40 fish by that point last year. Because I caught my first fish May 4th, and they were eating anything. I threw topwater that first day and caught fish. I threw big pencils and were catching bass, like 20, 25 inch bass on them. I caught my first keeper on a Super Strike darter like May 13th. So it's just so weird this year. It's just been really, really weird. But the fact that there's so much adult bunker around gives me hope that this spring being so horrible for us in the north, I know guys just a little bit south of us, I'm talking about you people in New York and New Jersey, Long Island area, have been killing it with bass into the 40, 50 pound range. And I mean, that is just ridiculous how many bass I've seen on Instagram of guys just pulling so many big fish. And it's stupid how many big fish are over there. But the cool thing is about that is we got the bunker now. So everybody that was been, literally, I had guys in early March on Long Island saying, oh, I'm throwing giant plugs and catching big fish in March. not like giant fish, but like keeper 30-inch bass in March in New York, Long Island area. And which is great for, I mean, it's awesome you guys were getting them, but now we got the bait here. So hopefully we can get on some around here. But the fishing in the spring here has been awful. And when I mean awful, it has been the worst I've ever seen, like in years. Cause I haven't kept log, started my log, a few years ago, and I haven't really kept before, even before that, like I fished every spring before that. And I marked my starting point when the water hit 50 degrees. So I'd start probably mid May, but sometimes I would start a little earlier than mid May. It'd be like pretty early May. And even I've gotten bass even in April. So it just, it shows you how, like I've never seen it this bad. I was never that good at fishing, but the fact that I'm not that good at fishing back then and I was able to catch bass earlier than now is just shows you how bad it has been. It's been horrible. Yeah, sorry, I'm just drinking some water here. So it's been really bad. And it's not, and the cool, the good, I guess not the good thing, but the thing that makes me happy, because I'm just way too competitive for my own good, is that I'm not the only one that's struggling here. There's a lot of other guys. I feel like I've been getting so many DMs about this, which is like awesome. I love when you guys DM me about like everybody failing together, which is cool, which is not cool, but it's good to know that I'm not alone in the struggle bus right now. Yeah, I've had a bunch of people, super long conversations with people. And yeah, I mean, everybody's been saying the same thing. It's hilarious. I've like three or four guys that literally I feel like are fishing the same way and they're having the same struggles and haven't quite hooked up into fish yet. And I was with them, you know, and then I don't want to say like some of them have outworked me for sure, but I've just been super lucky with finding the blitzing fish just because I've been following the wind and I know the wind is going to blow bait into spots, which is going to set up like points where the bass are going to start blitzing. And that's how I got my first fish of the season. Dumb luck too. Like there's a huge pot of school bait, huge. And there's all this bass coming and blitzing like in these little wolf pack. And they would go out and they'd chill for like 5 to 15 minutes and they would come in, they smash the bait again, they go out, and I happened to cast out right as they're starting to come in and boom, I hooked up on a fish and then all the bait started exploding and all these bass were swimming by my feet. Literally, I see all this bait in the water and I walk out and I literally haven't seen a bass on Cape Ann yet. And I walk out into the water and then 4 feet away from me, a striped bass swims right in front of my feet. And I'm like, okay, well, at least we know they're here. And then all of a sudden, and then it was just like mayhem, just bass just exploding on bait. And so that's how it happened for me early in the season. So that was dumb luck. So if you guys think that, like, I know a lot of you have been putting in an extraordinary amount of time to catch fish. I was super lucky to catch mine, my first bass of the season. Now I'm starting to click into a pattern here, and it's in a spot that I've never fished before. Again, why I said I've taken about 5 to 6 shot in the dark scenarios where I've never fished an area. I'm learning it for the first time, which is the worst thing to do. Never try finding new spots early in the season because you could not catch a fish there and it'd be super productive, or you might be able to catch one school. I mean, really, the realistic part is you won't catch anything and you don't know if it's productive or not. And that's where you can't really rule it out as being unproductive, but at the same time, you know what I'm trying to say here. It's hard to rule a spot out as being a non-productive spot super early in the season because there isn't a huge number of fish around. So if a spot is producing well early in the season, you know this is a spot that you need to keep in your back pocket. And I found one that I have fished one other time before. I caught two fish there in the middle of the day, 85 degrees. And that was midsummer. It's probably, I don't know, maybe late July. So that makes me think that, like, okay, that, like, at that point, I knew there was fish around. Like, I saw a lot of fish that day. And again, the ecosystem there is ridiculous. There's always seems to be huge number of fish in that area because there's always a lot of bait around. I know guys that catch bass there, huge, like in the Back Bay estuaries, that will catch bass 30, 40 pounds back there, which is ridiculous on live eels and stuff. So, and I actually can't confirm or deny that that's where they are fishing, but my assumption is that's where it is, because it's just a crazy amount of fish. Right now, you pretty much have to bike as far as I did to get there. So if you want to attack right now, what is the best way? Now, I talked about this in access to fishing locations, and I don't care where you are on the Striper Coast right now, it is extraordinarily hard to gain access to areas. A lot of them have been shut to residents only, as far as beaches go. So park outside where they say residents only and bike in, lock your bike up and go fish. That's what I've been doing. That's the only way you can really gain access to these spots that are going to be holding fish, at least in my area. A lot of the areas that are public access all the time are spots that are off the rocks, really. And then I start gaining access to those areas and fishing in spots that normally hold lots of fish, and there's nothing there. So I kind of rethink my life a lot. Like, when I'm talking about, my wheels have been turning, you know, like, how can the bass are not where they have been in the past. So I need to figure out something else, because I know they're here because I saw thousands of bass swim in blitz on bait one day, and the next day there's nothing there. Not even a single rain bait there. So how do you figure out where these bass have staged up? Because the thing is, like, they come in, they feed on the bait fish, or they come in stage. And they came in and were feeding on the bait fish. Now, you'd think that they would start staging up in the rocks and whatever, and wherever the little current breaks are in the rocks. And that's what, like, in my experience, that's what always happens. But apparently this year, that's not what's happening. So now I'm like, okay, I need to find a place where there's going to be food for these fish. I need to find a place where there's going to be warmer water. So obviously rivers, estuaries, back bays, those are all fair game right now. So then I try to narrow it down. Okay, now how do we know, okay, now we have to figure out, where's the wind been blowing in the past few days? Where is it going to have blown bait into, or is it going to have blown bait out of? And where's the wind blowing right now, and how can I set myself up for success? So this area that I fished, the wind was blowing south in this estuary. And the cool thing about estuaries is they snake all around. So most of the time you're able to find an area where if the wind is blowing south and then blows north the other day, you can still stage up where the wind is blowing onshore. Now, this is me being a rock fishing angler, and how I think is I want to fish where the wind is blowing onshore, because that's where the bait is going to get pushed to. That's where the bass are going to stage up and start feeding on it. So what did I do? It was blowing 20 miles an hour. I went right into the teeth of the wind where I was trying to throw soft plastics. I couldn't get anything really out there. Threw on my Confident plug, which is just a little SP minnow, one of the small SP minnows. And sure enough, first cast in the spot, I get a bass come up, whack the plug, and miss it. So then I reel up and I pitch it back out there. I tweak it four times and then boom, smash it. It was a smaller fish. First fish was probably 20 inches and the second fish was probably 14 inches. And so I was like, sick, caught a fish. What I was looking for there was the two things that I just naturally know in my mind. We need to find current. We need to find places where these bass are staging up. I know that the bass liked it. There's a bunch of little creek mouths, and most estuaries you can find little creek mouths. My goal was fish the creek mouths, wasn't working. So I fished right where the wind was blowing, right on shore. And I cast it out there and bang, caught a fish. I also was fishing an outgoing tide. And the reason you want to fish an outgoing tide in the spring is because all that water that moves in on an incoming tide is pretty cool. It warms up throughout the day and then it starts moving out, and all that warm water is starting to move out. The bait's starting to move out and the bass are starting to stage up and feed. And so that's what I was trying to focus on, is how can I catch bass and stage up and feed. I don't know if you can hear that, but it's equally as windy today as it was yesterday. And so my window's crackling away because it's blowing 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour out there, probably gusting to 30, and it's blowing my windows around. So that was what I was trying to I was thinking of. And again, I'm a rock like fisherman. I like to fish in boulder fields. I like to fish off of just big cliffs and stuff. I want to fish where the wind is pushing the bait towards the shore. That's how you catch 40-pound bass. That's how you catch a schoolie. And that's how you catch fish in my mind. So I tried. I was like, okay, I've never really fished estuaries. I don't know if this is the same thing in an estuary. So, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to go right to the point, right where the wind is blowing the hardest, right where the waves are the choppiest in the estuary, because there it was blowing so hard, there's literally waves breaking onto the estuary bank. And it was really deep and really clear because it was a high tide. It was just after high tide. And then I cast my little SP minnow out there. I had a treble on the belly of it, which I think was a size two VMC 3X strong thing, treble hook. I pinched the barbs on that, and I put a single tail VMC, inline circle hook on the tail. And sure enough, caught one fish there. And then on my way back, I was working along the side, and I started at like high tide, and I fished this little creek mouth, and I didn't get anything. And then the tide started to go out, and the current picked up a little bit, and then I fished the same creek mouth, and it caught. I hooked up onto one fish, reeled it probably four cranks. It spit the hook. I tweaked it a few more times in that same cast, and it whacked it. Now, that's a tip for everyone out there that's fishing in general, and especially when you're trying to target schoolie bass in season. They don't call them schoolies for nothing. They most of the time are in schools of fish. And what will happen is, if you're fishing, and you can fit, if you're fishing like an SP minnow, or you're fishing soft plastic and you get hit by a bass, and you hook up for a little bit and then it shakes the hook, tweak it a few more times. A lot of the time, if there's a school of bass there, another one in the school will whack it, because it just thinks that the bait fish got away from the other fish, and it grabs it. It's like an instinct. Like, they're so predatory and aggressive about, and I've even, you know, you see them try to take the plug out of the fish that's hooked mouth. So that just shows you that they want to eat what that fish already tried to eat. And when one goes after it, most of the time, if you have a little bit of space, like if it's not right at your feet, right at the bank, most of the time, if you have some water to work and you shake the hook and you still have like 10, 15 feet, you have a decent chance of hooking into another fish on that same cast. So, I caught two fish, two and a half, as I said, because I shook that one. But now what am I up to? I'm like, so I've caught three fish this season. So it's not like I've been doing ridiculously well. And I'm putting in way more effort than most are for schoolies. And that's the thing, like this time of year, I mean, what else am I doing? So like, I just have a lot of time to just fish in general. So it just makes no difference for me if I have to spend, it probably took me close to an hour to drive to where that spot is and to bike in, and then probably an hour to do and reverse that. Not only am I biking there, then I have to walk in this estuary and zigzag my way around these like little river cutout, you know what I'm talking about, the little cutouts in the bank. And in the summertime, I'm just like, whatever, I'll just walk through it and hopefully I don't get stuck in the mud. But when it's freezing cold out, I have to walk around them, and it's a whole thing, you know? And it wasn't easy to navigate that estuary, because again, I never fished there before, so I didn't really know what I was looking for. Now I have a little better of an understanding of that estuary in general, and I'm gonna fish it tonight. It is Tuesday, I'm hoping for some, like, here's the thing, every tide now, like every single tide that comes in and out in that estuary is pushing double amount of fish in, or triple amount of fish in. And one of the bass that I caught that day, which is yesterday, one of the bass I caught yesterday had no sea lice. So maybe there's holdovers there. And it's fairly likely that that bass was probably a holdover, which is kind of cool because I didn't really fish very hard for holdovers, but that gives me an idea of where to try next winter for some holdover bass. But let's talk a little bit more about trying to figure out this, how to figure out to catch some, let's try to get some bigger fish now. So where my mind's at right now is how do I maximize my ability with this really strange spring to catch big fish? So in my mind, June is the time where the biggest fish are pushed in to Cape Ann. I think maybe the last week of May we'll have a shot at some bass that are into that. I'd have to say into the maybe 20 pound range. If we're lucky, we'll get some 20 pounders. And I'm going to really start hitting it at night more with surprisingly large plugs. Like, this is something that's going to go into my bag, and I'm going to be throwing a lot this spring. And most of the time, I'm throwing a herring color plug this spring. It's just been so backwards because the bait's been weird. When you have thousands of bunker around that are this size and you're snagging them on everything, you're going to be throwing this. And what's hilarious is when you're fishing and you're fishing estuary and you hook into a bunker, they fight pretty hard. Bunker are like very interesting fish because they're hard fighting fish. They're not predatory or anything, but they fight hard. You ever snag a bunker, they give you a good little fight. And then you, which is sometimes fun when you're failing at catching anything else, like an actual fish, like a bass or something. But what was very interesting is when I snagged one of the bunker, a little after I snagged one of the bunker, I watched the school of probably, I don't know how long, it was probably 15 feet across, school of bunker, and all of them came up to the surface and like tails out of the water, jumping, and then they all swam like really fast, like big like wake on the surface of the estuary out into deeper water. So my assumption is, even as early as it is right now, there's a bass that is big enough to eat a 10-inch bunker. So that is pretty nice. That's a big fish. That has to at least be 30, 35 inches, right? You'd imagine. So as I said in other podcasts, even though like the On the Water magazine have their reports or their like predictions of the bass migration, they're like, okay, the green is schoolies and the yellow is keepers and then the red is 40 pounders or whatever. I don't necessarily agree with that. Yeah, I think the majority of the fish are schoolies this time of year, but there are going to be some upper classed fish that are going to be following these bunker schools extraordinarily early. Do I think that there's probably schoolie bass on Cape Ann that can eat those bunker April 20th? That is a possibility because I don't know when the bunker really showed up, but I bet there was a school of bass of larger fish too that followed those schools of bunker in. So I was off the rocks one day and I was in a pretty private area and I was fishing and I saw a bunch of birds working off of an island on a, had to be a bunker school. It just was because I kept seeing bunker jump out of the water, but I was also seeing bass hitting them. So again, it had to have been a bunker school with like, and these were not like little seagulls. These were like black back seagulls. Like these were big, big birds and they were eating the bunker, grabbing them off the surface and carrying them away. But why would the bunker be up at the surface if they weren't being eaten from below by something? And it was bass because I saw bass hitting them and going through them. So that night I staged up in a spot that normally when there's a big bunker school off the rocks, this gets bigger fish pushed into shore on a south wind. There's no wind that night. And the bass kind of weren't there. And by kind of weren't there, they definitely weren't there because I didn't catch anything, didn't see anything. I worked my way from big to small. The cool thing was I was able to try out the new Van Stahl and the bigger rod, and it just felt good. And oh my God, that Van Stahl VSX 275 feels powerful. Very, very powerful. I have 80-pound Max Quattro braid on that, and I was fishing with a 60-pound Blue Label Cigar fluorocarbon leader on it. And it was just kind of just because I wanted to throw around some bigger stuff, you know, just for fun. Because I love just throwing, like, who doesn't, like, the coolest thing about striped bass is you can throw the sickest plugs at them. And not only that, you can throw huge, like, huge giant topwaters, and they wobble and they thrash on the surface, and then you have this giant bass come up and smash it, and it's a beautiful thing. And being able to, like, see the progression of small fish being very picky on little bait to then there being larger fish not being picky and feeding, or I guess I don't know because they weren't there, but I don't think there's a huge number of big fish or big enough fish to feed on this big bait to the point that they're staging up in the rocks and feeding on lobsters and stuff at night. So prediction here, I'm going to make another prediction, and I was pretty correct with my last one. Last week of May to first week of June, they're going to be 40 pounders on Cape Ann. Whether you can catch them off the rocks in the estuaries, off the sandy beaches, maybe if we have access to some of them, that's going to be determined depending on wind and conditions at the time. But there should be some bigger fish pretty early. As I said, that new moon, whenever that new moon is, I can actually, I was going to check, but I don't know. Whenever that new moon is, whenever the new moon is, we should be seeing some bigger fish is what I'm trying to say. And I hope and pray that I can have a good season this year for larger fish and it's not really a bust. But the fact that I'm starting to pattern out things a little bit better and getting some stuff written down in my log and reading over conditions and that produced really well for me last year and trying and thinking a lot about that and trying to mimic stuff and stage up and do a lot of research and and being able to investigate, this is not really the word I want, but to be able to do some reconnaissance, there we go, found it, being able to do some reconnaissance on spots that I didn't necessarily like but I've heard good things about, and then looking at current, throwing some like bucktails around, feeling the bottom structure, feeling where bigger rocks are, moving bucktails around and everything, has been successful so far. Certain spots with bigger waves have surprised me with the amount of current that they've had, and I was like, that makes sense that there's 40-pound bass here. And I think I said that exact same string of words in one of my podcasts recently. But anyway, I just want to repeat that, like, current, wind, moon equals giant fish. And bait, I guess, if you have bait, that really helps. But even if you don't have bait and you have wind blowing straight on shore, there's going to be a bass thinking there's going to be bait there. And that's why they move in and they stage up. And it's not rocket scientist. It's not rocket science. You know, you can pattern this down. It's not too difficult to do. You just got to put in a little more than nothing. No work. I get a lot of people that DM me and complain about how they can't catch any fish, and it's probably because they're not doing their homework. If you do your homework, you're going to actually catch these fish. It's not the most difficult thing in the world. It's not like I have one specific spot that produces all my fish, you know? So that's the thing. It's not like just Cape Ann. It's not just Cape Cod. It's not Montauk. It is anywhere is going to hold big fish. It is going to, because when I first started fishing on Cape Ann, I was like, there's no big fish here. You know, I didn't think they got really that big around Cape Ann. I was like, I don't think really we have a bunch of big fish around Cape Ann. I think they go as far as Cape Cod, and then they kind of, there's a few that trickle down that are in that 30, 40 pound range, 30, maybe we can get a few that are 20 pounds, but then we don't get any bigger fish. And I was just flat out wrong when I was thinking about that. And you heard me say it in Coastline when we did the documentary. I said, I think that the biggest fish we can get around here is 20 pounds. And I didn't catch a big fish on Cape Ann that year. I caught a big fish in the Cape Cod Canal, but it was because I was being ignorant and not doing my homework. And And that's the thing. Like, you have to, that, like, and the thing is, like, you can fish hours upon hours upon hours upon hours, but if you're not catching anything, it's because you're doing something wrong. And log it up. Log why you're, like, log the conditions. Then keep flip-flopping until you find a matching condition that works for that area. It's really interesting depending on where you are. And again, I'm learning estuaries from scratch. I've never really fished estuaries at all. I have spots that I feel so confident off the rocks that I can go there and catch fish, and they haven't been producing at all. And then you go to an estuary, you follow the basic principles of why there should be fish there, and bang, you catch fish. And the reason why there's fish there is it's warmer water, there's bait in there, and the wind was blowing right onto the, where I fished that day, I could have fished where the wind was blowing offshore, but I knew that from fishing on the rocks, well, the wind's blowing onshore here, maybe the fish are set up because they think the bait's going to be blown here. And sure enough, they were. So again, like, you everybody has the ability and the power to actually catch fish. You spend, you know, you fish for 2 hours and you can't spend 15 minutes writing in a fishing log just the basic things, the basic weather conditions and waves and current and whatever. Not current, but you can write that down. But what I like, moon phase, wind, weather, and water temp, kind of pretty important. I've talked about this in a lot of times, but I'm probably missing something. I don't think so. I in like wave height and current, if you're in an estuary, if it was super strong current because of the new moon, but you, if you're reading your log, you'd think that it would be if it was around new moon. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can't lose faith because I, and you'll see it in the first episode. It's an amazing episode of the Striped Bass Hunt Show. How hard I worked for that fish, how many miles we drove, how much time I spent thinking about it. I was like, wow, I suck. I can't catch any fish. And then you hear everybody else is not doing as well as they did last year. And you're like, okay, I feel a little bit better about myself. How can I change my life around a little bit? How can I completely do a 360 on what I know and try to fish somewhere else? Because obviously what I'm doing right now is not producing fish. So why stop beating a dead horse here and actually try to turn your what's failing right now and switch into something that's actually producing. And sure enough, I did that. I tried to find where I thought the fish would be staged up, and they were. But how many times do you think that I went into different estuaries and fished and didn't catch fish? I probably fished the estuaries a dozen times, different estuaries. But that was the first time I fished that one in particular. But I fished certain estuaries multiple times, but I also fished a bunch of different ones. I fished hours upon hours in estuaries with nothing. And then going there and it being where it was, and it being one of probably the second biggest ecosystem in the area for just wildlife. And I keep saying that because that's very important. There's a lot of bait fish in there. There's a lot of food of multiple. I saw a dead horseshoe crab on the beach. And I didn't even think horseshoe crabs made it this far north. I'm sure they do, and I'm sure they make it further north. I just didn't know that. I've never seen a horseshoe crab here. But there was a dead one. So that's pretty cool that, it just shows you that there's crazy things that make it all the way here. And that was in there, and I saw so much bait fish. I saw, like, there's a lot of stuff, but I was throwing a little yellow SP minnow. Probably looked like a little bunker. It's probably why the fish hit it, because it probably mimicked a little bunker, and there's probably a huge amount of adult bunker in there. And so they're probably keyed in on trying to eat this adult bunker, but the adult bunker is too big, and if there's a smaller one that's mixed in with the school, maybe they whack that. Or if there's a school of just medium-sized bunker, they can feed on that. You know what's funny? There's like two sizes of bunker that I've ever seen in my life. There's like the peanut bunker, and then there's like the huge adult bunker. I don't see anything in between that. I always see the peanut bunker or the adult bunker. I've never seen like a medium size, like 4 or 5 inch bunker. I always see ones that are like 3 inches, or I'll see the like 10 inch bunker. It's ridiculous. And then when and the thing is, like, I don't know if I'm going to fish. I should try fishing the estuaries at night, because I know that's very productive, especially with Danny's. Danny plugs in estuaries in June is going to be interesting. It's also going to be full of mosquitoes, and I'm going to die a miserable death. but and flies of all sorts. That's the best part about the spring too, is there's not a lot of flies and stuff messing around with you. So you don't really have to worry about getting eaten alive by bugs and stuff. So that's always fun, because you can focus on fishing and less on getting eaten by mosquitoes. And I've been fishing lighter drag and lighter gear, just for fun, because I mean, I know I'm not going to be catching anything crazy. And I know that, like, yeah, I just talked about there being larger bass that are feeding on the bunker, but it's not going to be like that, like crazy like that, immediately. Do I think I have a shot at catching a big fish like that? Yeah, I think if I throw a nice large soft plastic on a calm night in an estuary, it's a possibility that I can catch a bass that's 15-20 pounds. Do I think it's likely? Not really right now. I think maybe every week that passes is going to make it a much more of a reality that that could happen. But I don't think I'm going to really start fishing my heavy setup unless I feel confident that I'm going to catch that. I did fish my heavy setup just because I was curious to see how it would go. But, like, really, really fish my heavy setup and be confident that I'm actually going to catch a big fish, I think I probably won't do that until June, and pull that out. And maybe the last week of May, as I said. That's when I think there's going to be larger fish around. And for me, it's like, even though I just caught two or three schoolies this summer or spring, I'm already like, okay, I caught my schoolies. Now let's see if I can get a little bit bigger. And now I'm going to try to catch the biggest fish I can in my area. And whether that be the 15-pounder or that be a 25-inch bass, I'm still going to be going after it right now. And I think that it's one of those games that's like, throw those medium-sized plugs, throw those Dannys that are medium-sized, or smaller Danny plugs. Gibbs makes a good small Danny plug. Pumbaa Plugs makes a good small Danny plug. You kind of have to DM them, though, to get a custom Danny plug like that. These are both Pumbaa Plugs, and that bigger Danny plug is amazing. I haven't caught a fish on it yet because I got it in the fall, but I am so excited to throw Danny plugs this summer in the rocks. I am, and, like, quote me on this, that thing's going to catch one of my bigger, like, I'm going to say plug fish this year. I think that the Danny plug is going to be what I catch one of my biggest fish on a plug with, because it just looks so good. It looks like a wounded bait fish. You ever snag a bunker and it, like, pops off? Like, I had one of that happen. Like, I was fishing with a little SP minnow, and I snagged it, and I was reeling it in, and it was snagged, like, in the stomach or something. It was fighting really hard, and it pulled off the hook, because I have barbless hooks and whatever. And then it was on the surface, and it was, like, tailing on the surface like this. And it looked exactly like a Danny plug going like this through the water. And if you didn't know, Danny plugs go like this. They nose down, and they wiggle the tail. And then not this fast, but they get more, like, go like that on the surface. And they wiggle the tail of the plug in. The bass go nuts for it, and there's a reason why they go nuts for it, because an injured bunker looks exactly like that, or a large white injured bait fish, and that's what Danny plugs mimic perfectly, is a big injured bait fish, and that's what the bass are going to be feeding on. The other one that I'm super excited to throw is the, I have one off screen right now, the Magnum Walker. That thing is going to be another thing that I think I can catch my biggest fish in the daylight on. Not that I couldn't catch my biggest fish in the daylight on Danny. I just think that thing right there, which I can just reach and grab. This guy is going to be a producer of huge, huge fish. And it just looks so good in the water. And I think, honestly, the best... like, the reason I think this is one of the best wooden spooks is just because it doesn't dive under the water. The problem that I have with so many wooden spooks is you're working them, and then you see a big fish swirling, and then you mess up on your rhythm once. You do one pop too quickly, and the thing dives under the water, and the bass see that, okay, and then you can't get it to work, and it's just pulled through the water like this. The bass look at it, and they're like, eh, this is not a real fish. And then they leave it. They don't even attack it. So then when it's on the surface and it's working back and forth, and you see a big fish, and you mess up in your pop, and it just, and because of the cut on the nose there, it's cut at some angle that it just shoots across the surface a little bit. The bass is not going to think twice about that. It's just going to think the bunker is trying to get away from it. And then you get back into your rhythm once or twice, and then bang, you're going to get that hit. And hopefully you can catch that big fish. And the great thing about this is it can catch the biggest fish out there. A huge, a 50-pound bass will eat a spook. And that's why I put big hooks on it. I think these are 4 or 5X strong VMCs. And I'm probably gonna try to get some of these with like crazy, extraordinarily like strong mustads or owner like hooks that people put on like tuna plugs and stuff. Because and the same thing with like the Danny plug here. I think that like I'm probably gonna try to put some plugs or some like plugs that I'll probably put some hooks on the plug. Sorry, couldn't speak there. Jeez. That are like made for tuna, like really strong. Because I have no problem chalking a very, very big, thicker hook through a fish's mouth. But I do have a problem on putting way too much pressure on my fish and having hooks bend. I've had a lot happen. I've been extraordinarily lucky last year to actually land those fish with those bent hooks. I have also bent out hooks and lost fish, but I was super lucky to not bend a hook and land and lose a giant fish. I know it's going to happen. And so I'm going to try to eliminate that. The weakest link, I'd say, to my plugs. And the reason I'm saying that is if you have a plug and you think you have even the slightest chance to land a giant fish on it, and I mean the slightest chance to land a giant fish on it, bump it up to the highest, the heaviest grade hook that you can financially or without the plug being its action being ruined. So because the thing is like about trying to get the thing is like you work so hard for that fish and then losing it because you skimped out on hooks because you're lazy because you didn't change your hooks on this plug, that's the worst feeling. So because you know you could have landed that fish. You could have controlled that. You could have landed that fish. And most of the time, I catch my biggest fish. And by most of the time, all of the time, I catch my biggest fish in boulder fields. So I need to put lockdown drag onto the bass. And I, as I've always said, I know they're going to go. I know they're going to take a run. But how do I make it so I don't lose this fish? You fish 80-pound braid. And you fish 80-pound leader, fluorocarbon leader. I'm working on, I forget the name of this knot, but I'm working on a knot. And the only reason I'm not going to say what the knot's name is because it's one of three things. And it's one of those three things. And if I say the wrong one, I'm going to look like an idiot. So, but it's so much easier to tie with heavier, thicker fluorocarbon. And like, I don't know why I don't, like, I'm still, I'm testing it. What I've seen so far, I've actually never, I've hooked one fish on it, I think, but it was a schoolie. And I think I want to burn the tag to make a little bit of a cap on so it doesn't slide, because it was sliding up, but it wasn't sliding out, if that makes any sense. Like the knot was sliding up a little bit up the main part of the leader, but the actual tag of the knot was not sliding in. Which is like, I don't like when my knot is moving around. Like that's something that scares me. I mean, it might not affect anything, but if I can just stop it from moving around, because the thing is like the knot pressure is not going to do that when it's under pressure. It's when it's loose is when it's actually starting to move up and down. And it's also not, it's not moving up and down in a way that my knot would slip. It's just moving up and down. And I don't like that. It just messes with me. It just makes me feel like the knot is not as secure. And so I want to test that out a little bit. And again, that's what the spring is for. Tie those knots, you know, throw those plugs with those knots. And if a schoolie can make that knot slip, then that's because it made that knot slip. It also could be because you tied this knot wrong, but the cool thing about this knot is it's very easy to tie. So I will get the name for that next podcast. I will fish leaders with that knot and see how I go this next week. Because if I lose a 15-inch bass on that knot, I'm not going to cry if it slips. So, because I'd rather that than have a big fish. And I'll test it too. Like, I pull really hard on it and see if it's going to slip and stuff. And I'll try to give it slack in the pole and see. I don't know. I'll test a lot of stuff out about it. But I think it's a new thing. And I talk so much about fish as heavy as you can go. But one of the hardest parts about fishing super heavy is tying a knot that's going to hold. Because an improved clench knot, which is what I tied all last year, I never had it slip. Not once did I have it slip and lost a fish to it. But it got sketchier and sketchier the higher up I went in pound test on my fluorocarbon. And as a lot of you know, fluorocarbon is extraordinarily stiff and very hard to tie knots with. So when you're trying to like tie a fluorocarbon leader and you're wrapping it, like you have to go down to like 3 wraps for the fluorocarbon leader. If you don't know how to tie a fluorocarbon leader and you don't really know what I'm talking about, improved clench knot, I do have a quick tip about how the knots that I use at this time that I've tried, and these are the two knots I use, polymer and the improved clench are the two knots I use. I use the polymer on the braid and the improved clench on the fluorocarbon. I do not fish monofilament because I think monofilament sucks, because I think it's weaker than fluorocarbon. And I has nothing to do with it being clearer. Like, people are, I got a DM from somebody saying that there was, that they're like, you don't need to be, like, striped bass don't care about how clear your leaders are. And I'm like, I know. That's not what I'm trying to say. I just think that fluorocarbon's a little bit tougher in both abrasion resistance and shock. It doesn't stretch as much as monofilament, which people hate because they think that it puts more strain on things to break. But I think that if you're putting too much strain on something and it breaks, your leader is too light, or your line's too light, or your hooks are too weak, or your split rings are bad, or whatever. So always keep trying to improve and move up as big as you can go without the fish being, or without your plug getting messed up. Because what will happen is the fish really don't care about what your plug's attached to. They just care if that plug is producing the profile that they need to eat. And if that's still happening, then go as heavy as you can go. If I could fish a 100-pound leader and 100-pound braid and still be able to cast out where I want to go and have my plugs work the same, I would. You know, I just think it's impractical at that point, because I think, number one, it just kills casting distance at that point. And number two, the leaders, like, then that leader could also, fluorocarbon-wise, could probably dampen a lot of the action of your plugs. Or at least a good majority of the action of the plug. So that's kind of what I've been. It's kind of what I've been thinking right now. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I don't really have anything else to talk about, you know, because I was going along. And I'm trying to make these like an hour and 20 minute podcasts. I don't know how long this is right now, but it's probably an hour or so. But maybe more, because I got really into it. So I hope you guys enjoyed are enjoying these longer podcasts. And the only reason I'm doing these longer podcasts is because in these times, it's just been like, I know how boring it is. And I've been spending a lot of time online and I just run out of content. And sometimes it's good to have a super long, like, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. So sometimes it's good to have these longer form podcasts, because it's good to listen to for a while and waste some time, you know, because it gets boring in these quarantine times. So anyway, thank you guys for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you next time.